This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Matt Splitter didn't believe he'd be coming back home to the family farm, but he was recently named as the Top Producer Horizon Award winner. We take a look at his story and meet a young farmer who has not only grown his operation, but built a financially sound business. Learn the keys he passes along to farmers of all ages who want to succeed in agriculture, and find out what he's learned from a kinship he formed with a retired farmer in the area. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. In 2020, I had a chance to use a new corn nitrogen product firsthand in my fields, Pivot BioProven. Pivot BioProven adheres to the root of the corn plant, creating a mutually beneficial, nitrogen-generating partnership that stays strong all the way through harvest. It's a weather-resistant and sustainable way to achieve more predictable and more productive yields than ever before. After a successful trial run in 2020, I hope you'll follow me on an expanded use of Pivot BioProven in the 2021 growing season. If you're like me and want to make sure your corn has the nitrogen it needs, whether or not, then check out Pivot BioProven. It'll change the way you think about nitrogen. You can learn more at pivotbio.com. Matt Splitter will probably tell you he still has a lot to learn. However, what he's already experienced as a young farmer are life and farm lessons that all of us can learn from. Matt is a guy who knows his numbers, and he'll talk about how important it is to have a good handle on those figures behind what you're doing. And doing so is the way you can build a solid and growing operation. He talks about the ups and downs he's had, times when he perhaps even considered getting out of the business, but also the practices he's put in place that have helped him become one of the strong young farmers in the industry. I know I learned a lot from our conversation, and I hope you'll be inspired as well. Matt Splitter is my guest. He is the recent Top Producer Horizon Award winner. He farms in central Kansas. Matt, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to visit here. And why don't you just open up and tell a little bit about where you farm in Kansas and kind of a general overview of your farming operation out there?
Yeah, my name is Matt Splitter. We call Lyons, Kansas, our home. I grew up in kind of between Lyons and Ellsworth at a small town of Lorain. Grew up the son of a fourth generation farm family, so I'm the fifth. When I was growing up, it was always my goal to be on a tractor or a combine as a kid. Whether that as a young age was always on dad's lap or in, you know, against the window, and as we move forward, I was able to start operating. And at the time, we were kind of a for central Kansas, we were probably average, a little smaller farm. I remember 800 acres, and then by the time my father passed away, we were about 1,400 acres, and mostly all owned by my mother and father and relatives, aunts and uncles. And so we had a very strong interest in farming, and went to college swearing I was never going to farm. I did not want to go down that route. And about 2 to 3 weeks into my first semester at college, all I could think about was the farm. And so I went down a path of and agriculture, graduated from Kansas State University, and then was working for the National Sorghum Association. In 2010, my father passed away pretty suddenly, and we came back to the operation at that point. We started with 1,400 acres in 2010 and 2011, and today we're just around 7,000 exclusive acres, and then we custom farm, depending on the year, but we'll round that number up to about 15,000 acres total covered between exclusive and custom farming operations.
Well, I know there's several things that I want to get into with how you operate and how you've grown over time, but I'm curious, what made you suddenly decide, I want to farm, when you went to college and said, I don't want to come back? What spurred the change all of a sudden?
You know, I think it was exposure to a lifestyle outside of agriculture. seeing people in the dorms playing video games and, you know, staying up late and didn't have much structure. And I didn't realize I had so much structure and had the desire to work and the desire to do something, you know, something with hands on and frankly, just with a structure, bedtime and a early to rise kind of mentality. I don't do well sitting still. I'm kind of always on the go. And in our house, we always say that, you know, I'm always on. My mind is always running. And so I think just seeing the alternate options of a lifestyle just didn't really fit for me, and just needed to be outside doing something. And so I started working for a farmer in college, just one nearby, and just kind of reignited the desire, or I guess ignited the idea that I wanted to be in agriculture in some fashion once I graduated college.
So you came back then to the farm. Your father passed away, and of course, suddenly, and you kind of come back into the operation. You said that perhaps about 1,400 acres or so. And I know some of your background and story. Of course, you were farming, you know, the best you knew how and you could. But at some point then, didn't you have a relationship with another farmer that allowed you to be able to begin farming some more acres? Talk about how that all played out and that relationship, because it's really, I think, a special relationship in a way that perhaps a retiring farmer was able to have a young farmer then come in and kind of begin to take over some of those acres.
Yeah. So when we started, you know, about 1,400 acres, we knew there were some opportunities to do some custom farming. And so we bought the farm's first planter. We had never owned a planter at the time. We always, my dad had that hired onto the farm, and we started asking the neighbors, can we do the jobs that you aren't doing, or jobs that you don't mind us doing? And so we started a relationship with multiple farms, just in the sense of doing a custom job. The markets kind of took a dip, and they quit hiring out the custom side. So we kind of were out of a job on the custom work side. And I was as you may have read in the story or watched on our video, is we had a year where the wheat price just plummeted, and I was stuck with quite a few bushels that I sold at a value that was under our cost of production. And that winter, I kind of went out searching for just some education. I knew I needed to make a change. I noticed that there was a farmer in the community who wasn't competition, that we weren't working with. He was 30 miles away. His name was Lee Scheifler. His wife is Margaret Scheifler. And I just had to ask him some questions. And not knowing much about him other than what the optics were of how he farmed. And my first question to him was, why do you plant your soybeans with an air seeder on 7.5-inch rows? And it was kind of all a blur from there. It went from just answering the question over the course of multiple hours conversation to just becoming a lifelong mentor to this point of you know, not necessarily the ideas of the art of agriculture, but just life in general, to the business side, to the production, to grain marketing, grain handling, you know, everything. And he was never, Lee and Margaret both, never told us how to do it, and they never made us feel bad for the way that we had been doing it, and then they listened to how we viewed, and my wife and I, how we viewed our farm and how we viewed the future of agriculture. And we just started learning. You know, they joke around and say that we taught them things, or we've been able to teach them things, when in reality I could never pay them back for just the, you know, just the advice, just the mentorship that they gave us. And throughout that process, as much as we were asking them questions, they were asking us questions to see if we were a fit to help them retire and take over their operation. And so we entered into a five-year plan, which has kind of extended itself by a year or two here, into helping them retire. And we entered that in about 2016 is when we entered that. It's not really a formal partnership, but it's more of a team. You know, we're part of each other's team, and the end goal is to get them retired, and the end goal for us is to become a sustainable operation that we can be proud of and is financially stable.
Of course, when you began that conversation with them, you didn't have an idea that maybe they were in a sense interviewing you, and that has worked out well. I think that there would be a lot of lessons for us to learn as younger producers about how can those relationships go well, and how can younger farmers, maybe not the word seek out those relationships, but give me your experience, because that is really valuable in farm country, being able in some cases to help retiring farmers find young farmers that would be a good fit. And how can young farmers put themselves in a position where they are a good fit for those around them? What would you have as advice, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, we're pretty unique in the sense that, you know, I wasn't able to farm with my father or family. I'll preface everything that I say with, I would gladly be working at a corporate job somewhere else and have my father alive than to be on the, in the situation that we're at. But we had to hit rock bottom in our operation to understand that we needed help, you know, not cash infusions, nothing like that. We just needed help, mental, you know, in the sense that reformation, being told that what we're doing is right and just stick with it, you know. And, you know, my mother, she worked off the farm her entire career, and she wasn't a big part of the operation with my father. And so, she was supportive, but outside of that, you know, there's no real life lessons to be taken from that other than just the mother son relationship. And so when we hit rock bottom, we knew we had to search out something. And we asked other people in general, and there's a lot of solutions were to quit farming. Another solution was to just be told, you know, kind of be just take the advice and just do it rather than learning. We just knew we had to search out some help. Going into it, you know, Lee could have very well just told me the answer and ended that conversation. So, you know, we believe a little bit in divine intervention, and I think for both of us, it was just that moment of, you know, he saw it from one side in the sense that an eager young farmer wanting to take on more and do more, and we saw it as, you know, that retiring farmer who's not competition, who's not going to make us or belittle us or make us feel lesser, and actually teach us. Now, as a young farmer, my advice would be is find that mentor. And maybe that mentor is their father, their grandfather, their uncles. But if that's not the case, look around the community and find somebody who you really respect, that you really value the way that they're just handling their life and their business. And just ask them a question. I mean, it's not, you don't have to have a planned out speech or anything like that. It's simply just, if there's something in your life that you are not comfortable doing, or in the sense of, I wasn't comfortable spending the money on an air seeder without knowing that it could cover a lot of acres and I could get rid of a planter and I could get rid of other things. But I needed that reformation from somebody to tell me, yes, it will work. And this, you know, let's work together to figure out how it could work. The other piece of advice that I would have is swallow the pride and just ask the question. You know, don't feel like you have to know it all. Don't feel like you do know it all. Just swallow the pride and ask the questions. The phrase that I keep using is find somebody that'll teach you, not tell you.
Good advice. Definitely. So people that are listening to this know that you're the Horizon Award winner, and obviously your operation has done well. What do you think it is then that has helped you do well? Certainly you have mentors, but you've certainly been doing, you know, a good chunk of this on your own, and what you're doing is working. So what types of things do you feel like have helped you be able to step forward the way that you have?
You know, obviously a good support system behind, you know, my spouse, Jana, my wife, she's super supportive of what we do, and she's a partner all the way through from the beginning. You know, my mother, same thing, is you know, she's super supportive and very strong family ties. On that side, you know, that's kind of a given, is you got to have a support system that will help along the way, emotionally. One other thing is don't be afraid to take a risk. You know your risk tolerance. Know that, you know, you don't have to do a complete 180 on your operation to make a small change. but be open and willing to listen to alternate ways of doing things. We took a really hard look at our balance sheet, took a really hard look at our cash flow, and we had to make some cuts. And, you know, for us, switching from conventional till to a minimal till was the first cut. And that kind of follows in my idea of risk tolerance. Is I didn't have the tolerance to go straight from conventional till all the way to no-till and just buy in 100%. So we took some gradual steps along the way. And then knew we needed to cut labor costs and equipment costs. And so it was a stair-step approach. The other side is try. One piece of advice that I was given that I've kind of taken to heart, and I don't really recall where I heard it, but it was wake up in the morning thinking, how am I going to save a dollar today, not spend a dollar? And so when you can have that mindset and wake up with the excitement of like, now what can I do to save a dollar? You will see some, you know, we saw some dramatic changes on our operation. We also have just surrounded ourselves with just a really good team of people. You know, our input suppliers are good. You know, we're upfront and honest with them all the way through and tell them what our expectations are. We have a really good banker. Our bank system that we use is just tremendous. We have, I really pride myself on initiating conversations rather than walking into the bank with a request or with just the hard facts. We sit down and we actually have a conversation, which leads to more opportunities for us. And another thing would be a great group of employees that just have completely bought in, and we have young and old alike on our farm. We have almost a 40-year veteran that has been with the Scheifler farm that we now have on our farm, and then we just made a recent hire from a graduate straight out of college. So we have a great team that just has bought in and understands the way that we operate.
You mentioned your relationship with your banker there, and I did want to ask you about that. And I'm not trying to dig into your finances, but more of a overall question of, you know, as you've made these expansions, how have you been able to do that? Because I know that you look at your balance sheets, you talked about, you know, where can I save a dollar and so forth. So give me the general idea then of how you've been able to have that relationship with a banker and been able then to be able to grow financially, wisely, in the growth of this operation.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that idea that we hit rock bottom, that we were forced into the situation at a young age to know your cost, know what it takes to produce a bushel. Before we hit that rock bottom, you know, the farming was really good in the sense that prices were high, yields were good, and everybody in the farm world was kind of on top of the world. And then when it kind of went south, we didn't have land that we could borrow against. And we didn't have the ability to refinance much. And so for us, it took this idea of just how do you micromanage a dollar, or how do you micromanage a bushel? You know, you had to go down to the even deeper than the field level. You had to go to the square foot level and look at how do we manage every aspect of our operation and start making some, and start trimming the fat, you know, trimming some equipment costs. You know, our bank, when we hit rock bottom there, our bank stuck their neck out and stuck with us. And, you know, we had a set of metrics that we were evaluating, and we had some goals that we had to hit along the way. But they very easily could have turned their back on us and said, your projections aren't real good. This is a high-risk loan. We think you should be doing something else. And those conversations did happen. I mean, I think those conversations needed to happen. But they did stick with us. The bank stuck with us all the way through. And we needed to make the cuts. We needed to make the management change, mental change. And you can't outwork your problems anymore. You know, you can't, if you have a $75,000 debt, that's a whole lot of custom farming you need to go do to clear that up. So it's not as simple as just taking on more ground or selling one piece of equipment. There had to be a complete strategic change, but also we had the attitude that we're not afraid to work hard. We're not afraid to go out and do those long hours and take on a little bit more just to make ends meet. And that's where the custom farming has really helped. And Lee and Margaret saw that. And one of the very first things that we did, you know, about 2 years after we hit rock bottom, one of the first things that we did with the Scheiflers is they transitioned over their custom farming operation to us. And so you know, they gave us an opportunity to continue to work harder and help put ourselves up on some good financial footing.
You've mentioned custom farming there several times, and it sounds like it's an important part of what you do. Is that then a way that you've been able to cover some more acres without necessarily having to own those acres? And has it been then a route for you to be able to perhaps rent or even own some acres down the road? Just talk about how that custom farming has been an important piece of what you do.
Yeah, our number one goal with custom farming was to create cash flow in the seasons that you don't really have a lot of cash flow. You know, in central Kansas, we have a wheat harvest and then we have a fall harvest. So there's two periods in the year that, you know, you have huge cash infusions. But in those off seasons, you know, if you needed cash flow, you had to go out and find it. And so we opened up our shed and you know, offered to fix neighbors' equipment. We custom farm did fertilizer applications, harvesting, planting, and we bought a skid steer. One of the very first things I did was buy a skid steer and go around and did pasture clearing and fence building and things such as that. Just anything that we can do to create cash flow in those off seasons. My wife had a job in town. She's worked in town for most of this. She recently just transitioned full time back to the farm and is the head of our. We're partners on the farm, 50-50 ownership, but she also has taken over the role of bookkeeper and data collection and data management. But the number one goal for the custom farming was to create cash flow in the periods of the year that you just didn't really have a lot of cash flow coming in. It also helps build relationships to hopefully one day exclusively farm those acres, but that wasn't our intention to do it. The intention 100% was cash flow in the downtimes of the season. We made a conscious decision not to jump into land purchasing early on. That would have really hurt our balance sheet when we did hit rock bottom. We made a conscious decision that it was in our best interest to rent ground, find sharecropping arrangements, share in the success that we were having when we did have it, but also, you know, that for us, cash rent is a huge expense up front. That we just couldn't stomach that. So we found as much share cropping arrangements as we can to move forward. And then we just let our work ethic and our quality of farming do the work on the backside.
Matt, tell me about what you're looking forward to this coming year here as we wind up. It's just about time to head out to the fields.
Yeah, the volatility back into the market has been really beneficial for marketing opportunities for us. This run-up of grain prices recently has made some marketing opportunities really attractive for us. We have gotten good timely rains. The wheat survived our really drastic cold snap here a couple weeks ago, and it's green, looking good. We don't chase markets too much on our planting intentions. We have a really strict rotation that we follow that helps us do our planning, upfront planning of marketing and inputs. We're kind of nervous about where some of these input prices are going to go. We've been able to lock in a lot of prices this winter that we feel like we've built in some pretty good margins, but kind of nervous about what the input pricing does through the third and fourth quarter of 2021 and projections into 2022. But you know, we're also excited about ethanol production. We're really close to do a lot of marketing with an ethanol plant locally here. But we're really excited to see that ethanol plant just producing more and more ethanol that would drive demand for our corn. And some years they buy Milo, grain sorghum. But we're really excited to see these market opportunities for corn and grain sorghum alike.
Matt, I really appreciate the time. It's been fun learning about your operation. Wish you all the best in this coming year.
Yeah, it's a pleasure visiting with you.
Matt has used custom farming as an important part of his business. It's allowed him to grow different parts of his ag operation. No doubt, he puts in hard work and long hours, but he's also learned to work smarter, not just work harder. And those business smarts, knowing your numbers and applying it to your business, has helped him now and better plan for his future, too. I appreciate you listening to this edition of our show. Be sure to connect with us with your story and topic ideas. The easiest way to get in touch is by following the program on Facebook. Just look for Farming the Countryside there. We highlight each week's program, plus other info you can use. And you can always follow our daily feature, American Countryside, on Facebook, or just go to AmericanCountryside.com or your local radio station. As always, thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.